our world, our country, our city, our churches, our schools, and especially our children are in desperate need of good leadership. However, good leadership is not enough. We need godly leaders who answer to a different authority. Who are not motivated by selfish ends and who pour themselves out to meet the needs of other people. Will you rise up to the challenge? That's a good question. And you know what? I'm excited to talk this morning about what it means to have a heart that's surrendered to God and to lead people in a different kind of way, to serve people. And to have servant leadership be something that you live day to day and not something that you just do for a moment or for a season. So let me ask you, what characteristics do you look for in a good leader? It's kind of an interactive morning. I like to get audience participation. So what do you look for in a good leader? Integrity, good. Honesty. Organized. Faith. Excellent. Those are all admirable qualities. Maybe someone who has charisma or vision. Somebody who can handle pressure or can take criticism. I was talking with one of your friends. I don't know if you know Cindy Moore, but she works with our kids' life area. And she was here on Friday morning with a crew of her team setting up and distributing and copying and stapling all the curriculum for the kids. So they got all the papers spread out, and they're stapling, and they're going away, and they're getting ready for the next quarter. And I'm like, man, that is so cool. And nobody sees that, you know? So I asked Cindy, I said, Cindy, what do you look for in a good leader? And I love what she said to me. She said several things, but the one that stuck in my head was this. Cindy said, my favorite leaders are people. And she kind of paused and looked at me, and I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. And she was kind of wondering if I knew what she meant. And I'm like, yeah. And she went on to tell me a story of how she'd had lunch with the president of the university where her and her husband work. And how cool it was when the president gets off the throne and comes down and goes to the cafeteria and has lunch with the common people, if you will. It says something about his leadership. And Cindy said, man, when I find people like that, I want to follow them more because you feel like you're on the same plane together. They understand who you are. And so I love what she said. Her favorite leaders are people. They care about people more than their goals, more than the program, more than the drive for success. I thought that was worth mentioning this morning. So let me ask you, are you a leader? Think about it for a minute. You might be, or you might wonder, huh, I'm not sure if I am. Well, let me say this morning, that servant leadership is not just for people who fill an official position, okay? Like a president or a manager or a director or a team leader. So as Christians, we're all called to serve and love one another and be an example to the watching world. So you've got people in your life that are watching you. And I want to urge you this morning that your roles, well, all of you, I think, play a leadership role whether you realize it or not. So let's do a little survey. Let's think about your unofficial roles, okay, as a leader. So raise your hand, just slip it up if you are a mother, father, brother, sister, grandparent, coach, teacher, neighbor, coworker, or a friend. Okay, have I roped you in? This message is for you, okay? You've got unofficial roles that you play. All right, now think about the official roles that you have as a leader. Now slip up your hand again if you are on any of these types of things. If you're on the PTO, if you're the CEO, if you're on the student council, if you're the vice president of a company, a manager, a committee member, a business owner, a team captain, if you have any type of official role in the community or in your school, just slip your hand up. If you're on a team, you've got a meeting to go to, good. Okay, some of you guys have official roles. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of hands for this next one. Think about your church roles. Even this morning, we've got people serving in the kids' area, doing the coffee bar, being here early, setting up things, welcoming people. The band just served us through worship. A lot of people on different teams, right? So just slip up your hand if you serve our church in any capacity during the week. In any capacity during the week. Yeah. Okay, so what we have to talk about this morning is very crucial. And sometimes I forget all the different ways that I affect people and that people are watching. So let's ponder for a minute. What would it look like to live a life of servant leadership in all of those areas of your life? And not just at the meeting and not just for that one moment. I don't know, sometimes you think of, well, servant leadership, that's kind of a funky word. And, well, that's just for church people. That's just for people in ministry. Or that's just on a mission trip. People serve each other and they get real close on a team. And then when they come back, you know, it's okay. But I don't think it is. I think Jesus really wants us to live this out day to day. And I think it's possible. And I think he gives us a very good model to follow. So what would it look like for us to do that together? To take our roles a little more seriously as a brother or a sister or mother or father or person on a team or even your role here at church? To do it for the lifetime, for the long haul. So let's look at what are some characteristics that would define a servant leader. So if you would follow with me up here. Our first one, we're going to spell out the word leaders together. And in their book, Student Leadership Training Manual, Tiger McClellan has a few things to say about leadership. And he uses the acronym LEADERS, and he says this. First letter is L, that leaders are learners. They have a teachable spirit. Leaders are always learning about themselves, their faith, their leadership roles, and the people that they lead. All right, the second one, E, leaders are encouragers. You want to look for people who have a spirit of encouragement. A person with a critical spirit may have power, but they will not be a true leader, he says. All right, A, leaders are active. Leaders do something. They act. They live life. And that leadership for them is not just a theory or an idea, but they put it into practice. All right, the next one, D. Leaders have a deep faith in Christ, at least servant leaders do. Leaders are faithful disciples of Christ who want to be used by God. Do you want to be used by God? I do. I sure do. And they have a solid faith that allows them to trust the Lord in all circumstances. All right, three more, E. Leaders are examples. Like it or not, good or bad, the roles you have, you're an example. You're being watched by other people. Maybe it's your own children. Maybe it's your coworkers. Maybe it's your neighbors. But people are looking at your life. Are you being a good example would be my question for you today. And if we're not, or if we could work at it more, how can we really take advantage of what it means to be a servant leader? All right, two more. R, leaders take risks. Leaders need to take risks in order to stand up for their faith. Leaders need to take risks to help people move to maturity. He concludes with, public leadership without the private attitude of service is empty and open to temptation. And that's where we're going to camp out. The rest of the time this morning, we're going to spend on S. We're going to spend looking at what it means to be a true servant. So I've got a little illustration for you. When I graduated from Taylor University, they do something that's rather unique. I'm not sure if any other school does this, but when I graduated from Taylor, they gave me a diploma. And they said, good job, way to go. You reached the requirements that it took to get your major. And they handed me my diploma, which most schools do, hopefully, if you've passed the requirements. And they did something right after that that was rather unique. They handed me this. In one hand, I got my education. In the other hand, they gave me this. This is a towel. And on this towel, it says, Taylor University, committed to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. And at the bottom it says, Christ, our example of servanthood. Isn't that wild? They said, here's your education. Awesome. Now go out and serve the world with it. That's pretty cool.
And so that stuck with me, and I held on to it, as you can tell. And so we've got two ways we can approach leadership this morning. Over here, we've got the idea of servanthood and the towel. And over here, we've got the crown. Anybody like getting awards? Anybody like getting awards? Prizes? Achievements? I've got some old trophies from high school. I've got some plaques. I've got some fun, you know, things when I was in elementary school. Like you get a, I don't know, honorable mention in the garden fair. You know, just crazy stuff. And I kept all that stuff. And then I'm kind of like, well, why do I keep that? Well, I like having my ego stroked. I like feeling important. I like getting attention and credit and feeling successful. Don't you? Yeah. It's tangible. And so most of the world is chasing this. They chase after success, and they chase after their own ambition. And I want to say that that's not the best way to lead. Have any of you ever served under somebody who was full of themselves, who only cared about how far they could get and what they could gain from it? Those people aren't fun to be with. For example, if you're on a sports team, those kind of leaders are ball hogs. And it's frustrating because you're like, I'm open. I've got the shot. I'm open. And they're dribbling, and they take the shot for the 30th time anyway and get blocked. And you're just like, why am I on this team? And they forget the whole sense of team, right? So God's like, look, I've got another way for you. I want you to serve one another. I want you to be a team player and learn to use your gifts. So, for example, a servant leader would do this. Is anybody thirsty? This is an interactive morning, remember? Is anybody thirsty? Sure. Who's thirsty? I am. Dave's thirsty? All right. Dave, I went ahead and poured a drink earlier. And normally, people would bring the speaker a drink, right? But I want to serve you, so I'm going to bring up a nice cup of water for you. There you go. I heard that, Matt. And no, I don't have any donuts. But here's the idea, that the true servant leader steps off the platform and comes down and be with the people on their level. I'm really thirsty, and I gave the drink to Dave, so I'm going to grab mine real quick. I really wanted to drink his drink and had to put my parched throat aside. And that's tough to do. That's really small. But when you're cleaning poopy diapers in the nursery and you're like, why am I doing this? You got to remember you're doing it for a higher calling. It's not just for the kid or for the parents. You got to be serving God in it, or you're just not going to want to do it any longer. And that's where servant leadership is going to end up. We've got to get our instructions from the Lord. So we're going to jump in together to what Gene Wilkes in his book, Jesus on Leadership, says are the seven secrets of greatness. Okay? These are all taken out of the Bible from Scripture, mostly from the life of Jesus, who I think is an excellent model of leadership. If anybody could have claimed the crown, couldn't God? Why should I do that? Because I said so. Why? Because I'm God. Well, he could do that, couldn't he? And he says, no, I'm going to show you a different way. And it's the way of kneeling down and picking up the towel. So here we go. The first one under the seven secrets of greatness is this, that servant leaders humble themselves and wait for God to exalt them. Now we find in the book of Luke that Jesus is talking about the invitation to a wedding feast. And people are invited to the wedding feast. And he says, when you get there, don't like rush up to the head table and sit down right next to the bride and groom spot. Well, why not? Well, because somebody might show up at the wedding reception that's more important than you. Like the best man or the maid of honor or the parents, okay? And he's like, don't just take that selfish seat of honor. Take a lower seat so that when the guests of honor show up, they might say to you, friend, move up to a better seat. Instead of, friend, you're in the wrong seat. Please take a seat in the back of the room. And so Jesus makes a good point, that in time, God will lift you up. You don't need to be so concerned about people noticing you and you getting where you want to go. That God will bring you along. So he says, let's be humble. The second one is, servant leaders follow Jesus rather than seek a position. And I want to read to you from the book of Mark. In Mark 10, it says this. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do us a favor. Right, they're talking to Jesus. Hey, buddy, you want to do us a favor? And he says, what is it, he asked. He says, in your glorious kingdom, we want to sit in the places of honor next to you, they said. One at your right hand and one at your left. But Jesus answered, you do not know what you're asking. You get the guts of these guys? When you come in your glory, can we sit next to you on the throne? Jesus is like, I don't think you understand what you're asking. He says, are you able to drink the bitter cup of sorrow I'm about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering that I must be baptized with? Get this. Oh, yes, they said, we are able. And I'm scratching my head like, dude, you guys are heaping coals on your head. Just stop. But they didn't understand. And they were doing the opposite. They were seeking the position rather than seeking Jesus as their leader. All right, our third point is servant leaders give up personal rights to find greatness and service to others. And this is a continuation of the same story. Let's find out what happened. When the 10 other disciples discovered what James and John had asked, they were indignant. You see what's happening? A little competition among the followers of Jesus. Hey, hey, what? If they want the right, and I want in on that too. So they're starting to get a little competitive. So Jesus called them together and said this, you know that in this world kings and tyrants and officials lord it over the people beneath them. Talking about leaders who aren't servant leaders. He says, but among you, it should be quite different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even I, the Son of Man, came here not to be served, but to serve others and to give my life as a ransom for many. Isn't that wild? Jesus totally puts aside his personal rights that he could have claimed. And he says, look, I want to show you a better way. The God of the universe is going to serve us. That's just weird. That's not normal. But that's the kind of leadership that Jesus wants us to be about. Servant leaders, number four, can risk serving other people because they trust that God is in control of their lives. I want you to hear, a lot of you guys know the story about Jesus washing the disciples' feet, right? You remember that one? Well, I love the verse right before it because it gives us a little context why Jesus was able to do that. In John 13, it says this, Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything and that he had come from God and would return to God. So he understands who he is and where he's come from, and he understands his purpose. And because of all those things, then he can do this. So he got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. Then he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel he had around them. I always forget, I don't know that I've read that very much, the verse beforehand. Wow, because Jesus knew who he was, he knew who God was, he understood his purpose. Then he can take off his outer clothing and he can pick up the towel and the water and wash the dirty, stinky feet of the disciples and say, this is how I want you to lead each other. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool. Do we understand our purpose and who we are and where we've come from enough to put aside our pride and our own goals to meet the needs of other people? I tell you, I get in the way. My own selfishness gets in the way. That is a hard thing to grasp. So I'm hoping by the end of the morning we can get a hold of it a little better. Number 5, servant leaders take up Jesus' towel of servanthood to meet the needs of others. And we just saw that as he did that with the disciples. When I was in college, I was a waiter at Damon's restaurant. Anybody been to Damon's Ribs? It's a good place. If you know how the restaurant is set up, Damon's has kind of a clubhouse feel. They've got a bunch of big screen TVs, and at each table in the clubhouse, they've got like a speaker that's kind of built into the table. Kind of, it's elevated up a little bit, and you can turn the dial to hear what screen you want to listen to watch the game or whatever. And so I'm a waiter. I'm serving on a Sunday afternoon, I think. And I took some orders of some junior high girls that were sitting around a table. They're having a little party together. I took the orders, and they all wanted some drinks. So I go back, and I get like 5 of these big, you know, huge drinks full of ice and Mountain Dew and Diet Pepsi and whatnot. And I come out with my tray, and I come over to the table, and I set it down on the speaker thing because it's getting really heavy. And I'm having a hard time balancing it. So I set it down on the speaker thing, and I take the first drink off and set it down, and the whole thing gets unbalanced, and I'm not thinking about it. And all of a sudden, boosh, 5 huge drinks and ice fly across the table and hit all the girls that are sitting around the table. I mean, there is no way to cover it up. Ice all over the floor, and you gotta know, it was loud. And everybody at the clubhouse was like, whoo, you know? And I'm like, turned beet red, and I'm like, totally embarrassed. I'm not even like thinking clearly, like trying to apologize and scoop pop and ice off the table and it's not working. And all of a sudden, one of the other waitresses comes over and she's got a towel and she heard the noise and she starts scooping the ice up and wiping the table down. And I'm like just humiliated. She kind of takes over. I go leave back in that little hallway. You wonder what the waiters and waitresses do back there. Well, I'm like hiding. Because I'm like totally embarrassed. So she comes back and she's like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. They think you're cute. It'll be okay. So I'm like, whoo. So anyway, I bring that up to say, we need more people like that, that come to the rescue, willing to serve. I don't know if, I'm pretty sure the girl doesn't know God, but if she does, that's awesome. But if someone who doesn't know God can do that, man, can't we do that even more to come to people's aid and not necessarily in an emergency situation, but to live a life of that kind of a leadership style. All right, 6, together. Servant leadership goes like this. Servant leaders share their responsibility and authority with others to meet a greater need. In the book of Acts, the Jews are arguing over the distribution of food to the widows. Kind of a strange thing. But in that time, they had daily distributions of food, and some of the widows and some of the groups were getting overlooked. And so they're kind of whining and complaining to the disciples, hey, they didn't get enough food over there. And the disciples get together, and they're like, you know what? God has given us a mission to share the gospel and to preach his word. And why are you guys arguing about food? So he gives this example, and he says, instead of us quitting what God has asked us to do, they do this instead. They say, brothers, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom, and we will turn this responsibility over to them. So basically, they dub some leaders, they delegate some jobs, and they address the problem, but they don't have to do it themselves, and they share the responsibility. They're able to meet the needs of the people, but they're still able to continue on their purpose of sharing the word of God. Does that make sense? So I'm like, huh, that's a pretty good example of trying to meet people's needs without having to do it yourself. You know what? Sometimes I struggle with that as a leader. I try to do things myself when I should be leaning on other people more. And sometimes it's easier. Because if I give the job away, then I got to tell them how to do it, how it needs to be done. And if they don't know, then you got to train them. And then you got to trust them that they're going to show up on time and that they're going to fulfill their role. And that's hard to do. But I tell you what, sometimes it comes off better than you could have done it. And the idea of letting other people join you takes your impact much further. There's no way I can reach all the teenagers in the youth group. We've got to have a team. Everybody's got to play a role. So I hope that makes sense to you. And here's the last one. Servant leaders multiply their leadership by empowering others to lead. You know, there's a great story I want to read to you in Exodus. Moses gets some advice from his father-in-law. And it goes like this. Now let me give you a word of advice, and may God be with you. You should continue to be the people's representative before God, bringing him their questions to be decided. All right, Moses was in charge of all these people, and they at some point started to have conflict, and they keep bringing all of their issues to him. And he's like, there's no way I can do all this. And so his father-in-law gives him this advice. He says, you should tell them God's decision, teach them God's laws and instructions, and show them how to conduct their lives. But find some capable, honest men who fear God and hate bribes. Appoint them as judges over groups of 1,000, over 100, over 50, and over 10. So these men can serve the people, resolving all the ordinary cases. Anything that is too important or too complicated can be brought to you. But they can take care of the smaller matters themselves. They will help you carry the load, making the task easier for you. Do you get what happened? Jethro gives Moses some great advice and says, look, this is too much for you. You need to spread out your leadership. You need to multiply, empower some leaders, dub them as people over different groups, thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens, and then you'll be able to help everybody. And your load will be easier yourself. So I want to do a little hands-on demonstration of what it looks like to do a little multiplication. And here's what we're going to use kind of as a model. Bring up our next slide there, Brian. The levels of leadership kind of go like this. Level one, I do, you watch. Level two, I do, you do. Level three, you do, I watch. Level four, you do, I do something else. And level five, you do and develop someone else. That's what we want to get to, the multiplied leadership. So I need a volunteer from the audience who knows how to tie a square knot. Anybody in our crew know how to tie a square knot? Christy, come on up. Woo-hoo! Give her a round of applause. Here's a piece of rope. I'll show you once, and then we can do it together, okay? Let's kind of do the first part of a shoelace knot. Cool? And then we flip that over there. Stick this end in there. And when you're done, you can kind of check it. It works like that. All right, you give it a try. Excellent. Now let me show you what a granny knot looks like, because if you do it wrong, you get your ropes crossed over, and it looks a little different, and it doesn't hold as well. Oops, I did another square knot. It's hard once you know how to do it wrong. I keep tying a square knot. There you go. That's a granny knot. Okay, that's what you don't want.
Right.
Okay, and this is how you check it. And just so you know, we're going to put a model up on the screen. There it is. See that? Okay. Now you're going to be responsible for teaching six other people how to do this. And ultimately the whole room. Okay. Do you think you can handle that responsibility?
Sure.
I'll know you did your job when we check with the last person and they've done it right. Okay. Make sense? Right. Okay, so I need six volunteers who want to learn how to tie a square knot. Come on up. There's one. All right, let's be quick. Don't be shy. Right there, Greg. In the way back. Come on up here, Nathan. Yvette, sure. How many we got now? Let's, one, two, three, four, five, one more. Anybody? Right there. Excellent. Okay, Christy, you're going to stand right here. And excellent. I'm going to bring you guys over here. You face her side by side. Just the two of you. Yvette, come on over. Right there. And the other four of you, I want right back here. You're the third tier. Okay? Billy, right over here. Greg, Nathan, Shayla, awesome. Okay. Shoulder to shoulder. Beautiful. All right, so here's the idea. It would take me a long time to teach all of you how to do it. But if we multiply it, we can get it done much quicker, right? So you're going to teach just two of them. So you give them each a rope. Okay?
Okay.
Go ahead. Teach them how to do it.
Right over left and then left over right. Here, watch that.
Everybody know how to tie the first part of a shoelace knot? Then you got half of it. Excellent. That looks good. Are we getting close?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Christy, I want you to give each of them two ropes, and I want you to train two people behind you. And then I'm going to check your work. You know, these guys are a little stressed. Does anybody know what a square knot is good for? What's that? Sailors, right? Sailors, is that what you said? Sailors use them to tie up their sails. Yeah. Anybody ever tied a package? A square knot's good for tying a package. If you have to do first aid on the trail, you could use a square knot to tie up a bandage. There's some good uses for it. I'll tell you what it's not a good use for a square knot, is to go climbing with a square knot. You don't want to tie a square knot on your belt and hook yourself into the rope because it's not that good of a knot. But this one is. This is a figure eight knot.
Yes.
And that'll last. And that could save your life. So we're going to check these guys. How's your work? I want to see some square knots in the back row.
It's really tight.
It's really tight. It looks good. Greg's still working. Nathan, you got it there?
Yeah, I did it, but
that looks like a Grammy knot, Pete. Give it another shot.
Got it.
Greg's got it now, okay.
Need some help.
Excellent. We're almost there. Brian, go ahead and bring up the next one. Here's the idea. I want you to be about multiplying your faith that is much more important than a knot. And so it looks like this. If you picked two people to disciple for the next 4 years, you did two people this year, two people the following year, etc. By the time it was done, 30 people could know the message of Jesus and be walking with him in 4 years. That's like high school, right? That's like maybe your term at your job. Isn't that pretty cool? All right, let's look at the next one. If we try to just do it one at a time, you do two people and then they don't train anybody. You do two more people and they don't train anybody. You only get eight. What would you rather have, 8 or 30? Well, gosh, that's pretty easy. So let's see how our four in the back row did. Did we finally get it there?
They're all there.
Everybody's got it?
Taking another part.
Excellent. Give me a round of applause. Christy, good job. You can take your ropes with you. Apparently it's too heavy. Do you get the idea, though, that multiplying our faith is that much more important than tying a knot? And that God wants us to be about leadership that does that. So there's a couple things that we need to get a hold of so that we can understand how to do servant leadership. Remember I talked about Jesus understood who he was, who God was, and his purpose? Well, that's what I want to tackle here in just a minute. Our teenagers have been learning this over and over and over again for the last several years. So I'm going to ask these guys, close your eyes. Close your eyes. If you're in the youth group, close your eyes. Slip up your hand if you know the answer to this question, okay? What are the two most important things that Jesus said in the Bible? He summed up the whole Bible and said these are the two most important commands. Kyle, give me one.
Love God.
What's the second one? Ian.
Love man.
Love man. Love people. Yes, good. Open your eyes. Everybody else has been reading it off the screen, so there you go. Let's take a look at the Bible verse where that's found. And it goes like this. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. That is major, and I don't know if you're going to get it, but I hope you get a hold of this. Your reason for being on the planet, your ultimate purpose in life, is two things. Can be summed up in two ways. To love God and to love people. You know what? Even a child can understand that. And Jesus boils the whole Bible down and he says, look, it's not real tough. Here's the simplicity of it. But it's hard to do. It's really hard to do. But if we can get a hold of, no matter if you're a mom or a dad, whether you're working in the field or working in your house, whether you're a student or a child, you can embrace this mission, this purpose, and say, I can love God and love people wherever I am and whatever I'm doing. All right, the second one is, what is our mission? And Jesus makes it pretty clear when he's about to leave the planet and go back to heaven, he says to the disciples, look, here's what I want you to do while I'm gone. I want you to make disciples, make followers of me. A disciple is a learner. It can be a disciple of anything. In Jesus' case, he says, I want them to follow me. And so he puts it this way. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. He's like, I'm going with you. Now go get them. Here's your mission. If you're a parent, you've already got people to disciple, your own children. Can I give you just a quick little example? My son, his name's Devin. He's about a year and a half old. And I'm trying to apply these kind of things. I'm like, I don't know if it's too early or not, but I want to be a parent who loves my son and teaches him God's ways. And so he runs into my office, and he'll pull all the books off my bookshelf. I'm just like, oh, so frustrating, because it's day after day. Well, one day he pulls the Bible off the shelf, and he looks at it, and I picked it up. I said, Devin, this is a special book. This is a book from God. This is the Bible. And we went over that a couple times, and later that week, he did the same thing, pulled out the Bible again, and he was like, Bible, Bible, Bible. I'm like, yeah. And so I'm like, well, let's try to read something. So I'm like, I don't know, what can he understand? I have no idea. Let's start with Genesis 1:1. All right, open it up. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Devin, that's cool. God made the earth, and he made you. And I told him that. Now, I don't know if it sunk in, but I'm trying to start with my son to say, you know what? I want to pass on my faith. And I have a responsibility as a parent to do that. So if you're a parent, you don't need to think up and dream up people to disciple. You've got some. All right, let's go to the next one. What is our attitude? This can make all the difference. If we start serving and leading with the wrong attitude, we're going to quit shortly. And it goes like this. An attitude like Jesus that is humble needs to be like Philippians 2. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourself. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus. That is tough to do. When somebody's in the bathroom and you really got to go, you don't want their needs to be more important than your own. Right? Yeah. Everybody been to the gas station, been to a restaurant, you're like, yeah, you really got to go. So it's really hard to put your needs aside. It's really hard to say, all right, I'm going to value you more than me. At the same time, still caring about yourself, but not first. All right, let's look at the last one. Who are we serving? Even in church, sometimes I forget. I'm like, man, I'm serving Tom. No, wait, I'm serving you. No, wait, who's my boss? Who's your daddy? Well, God's my boss. And I forget that sometimes. And so when we're serving, this is important to remember in Colossians. It says it this way, that whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. As the Lord Christ you're serving. And we got to get a hold of that to say, all right, when I don't feel like it, when my husband or wife is being just a real pain, when my kids are being brats, when people at school are being bullies, when I don't feel like loving anybody, it's really hard to dig deep and say, okay, I'm going to do my role anyway, and I'm going to remember that I'm following God and that he's the one asking me to do it. Because you know what? When we serve people and they're our gauge, we can get really disappointed, really discouraged, really frustrated. People don't show up, balls get dropped, and all of a sudden you're left doing it yourself and you're just like, what the heck? But if we know that God's calling us to do it, it's much different and we can last much longer. So here's where I'm going with this. I want to read a quote to you from The Purpose-Driven Life. Anybody been reading The Purpose-Driven Life? It's been good stuff. I've just kind of dabbled in it a little bit. I'm in the first few chapters. But this chapter really stuck out to me a couple weeks ago when I was kind of forgetting what was important. And Rick Warren puts it this way. This life, this here and now life, is not all there is. It says, life on earth is just the dress rehearsal before the real production. You will spend far more time on the other side of death in eternity than you will here. Earth is the staging area, the preschool, the trial for your life in eternity. It is the practice workout before the actual game, the warm-up lap before the race begins. This life is preparation for the next. It says, when you live in light of eternity, your values change. You use your time and your money more wisely. You place a higher premium on relationships and character instead of fame or wealth or recognition or achievement or even fun. So your priorities are reordered. Keeping up with trends and fashions and popular values just doesn't matter as much. And Paul said, I once thought all these things were so very important, but now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done. So I want to urge you to say, okay, if I want to be a servant leader, what does that look like? How can I do that? Well, here's a tangible way you can do that. To learn to think eternally. And to put it into practice, it might look like this. Let's go to the last one. To pass on your faith. If you've watched the Olympics, you've seen the Olympic runners pass the baton in a relay race. That's the same idea. That we don't want it to get dropped. We don't want to be disqualified. We want to pass it on so that others can know about it. And here's the challenge this morning. To walk away this morning saying, okay, who are two people this school year, by next summer, that you could start discipling? If you know God, you've got a personal relationship with Jesus, and you've been growing in your faith, then this is for you. To say, okay, how can I take what I've learned and what I know and meet with somebody and pass it on to them? So maybe you grab some lunch and you read the Bible together, and then maybe you go catch a movie or something. You combine it with something fun, you do something that's spiritual, and you get to know them. And maybe you meet every other week for the next 6-8 months. And you start to pass on your faith. It could be somebody that already knows God that just needs to grow. Or maybe it's a neighbor or a family member who doesn't even know God. And maybe you can begin the process of sharing your life and your faith with them. And here's the flip side of the challenge. Maybe you're sitting here this morning and you're like, you know what? I don't know God very well. I don't know the Bible very well. Or maybe you did at one point and you've kind of drifted away. Or maybe you're on the journey and you're like, dude, I'm just checking things out for the first time. I'm not sure. Well, then I would like to invite you to say, hey, would you be willing to ask somebody to train you, to work with you, to disciple you? So this is kind of gutsy, but I'm just gonna throw it out there and say, hey, would you be willing to slip up your hand right now if you'd be saying, hey, you know what? I wouldn't mind if somebody wanted to meet with me occasionally and talk about God and work through the Bible a little bit, because I'd like to grow. And maybe somebody who's a little further along on the spiritual path or knows God a little bit better could help. Anybody willing to say, hey, I wouldn't mind teaming up with somebody? I'd like that. Okay? That's great. You know what? Even those of us are who maybe are more mature in our faith, I'd still like that, you know? But I know God, and I feel like I know the Bible fairly well, but I still would love to have, you know, people in my life to do that with. But at the same time, God says, look, you know that stuff. Now go pass it on. I don't need to be told how to follow Christ. I know how to do that. So, teenagers, you guys have been taking the lead with us a little bit, right? Just share with us real briefly, who are some names of some friends that you said, hey, I'd like to disciple this school year? You guys have a few names for us? Say, hey, I was thinking about this person, maybe. Nicole, okay. Lee? Alex?